It seems like there's been a more concerted effort on this front, but the result seems to still be pretty uneven. It's when it comes to ISIS and some of the militant jihadist organizations, these companies have had more time to try to catch up with that. But I think with ISIS in particular, given how decentralized its propaganda efforts are, there's still a pretty substantial hurdle there in really being able to identify and take down content. And there's just so many different platforms that these organizations and these followers can use. So it's still an area where it seems like there's been a strong effort by some of these companies, but the algorithms and the ability to take these things down in a timely way has probably lagged behind. It has become a lot more sticky when we've started to talk about far-right extremism, particularly in the United States, because very quickly we're running into sort of freedom of speech issues and how far should tech companies go on some of these questions. And it's raised the question if there isn't a double standard in the way that companies are treating these two different forms of violent extremism.
So more specifically, and back to the initial question, I'll get to those other two issues later, the far-right extremism and the company's treatment, which may not be equitable of the two issues. But I want to ask first, do you see enough progress by large tech organizations on this front? Do you see enough movement to make a difference?
It's hard to say that the efforts that they've undertaken are actually making a substantial difference. It's one of those things that's very hard to actually measure. It's hard to measure how much effect it's having, especially because we still do see instances where individuals seem to have been radicalized in significant part by material on the internet and through social media, and are able to make connections to ISIS and to followers of ISIS through those mechanisms. So it's hard to speak to how many people haven't been able to because of those efforts. It seems like those who are still interested in that material are able to find it and able to make those connections. So from that standpoint, it's really not having the ultimate effect that we would like. It's hard to tell how much of an effect it is having, though, on things like recruitment and radicalization.
And speaking of recruitment and radicalization, do you get the sense that ISIS is continuing to recruit on the same level it was a couple of years ago, or has it changed its whole model since it's obviously changed its location to sort of a virtual headquarters as opposed to a physical one?
And it seems to have been able to continue to put out propaganda, even though it has had this significant loss of territory. So that does seem to be a continuing way that it's important for the group to promote itself and to attract people to act in an inspiration or an association with the group, to show that it's creating new relationships with groups all over the world. So it's still pretty effective in its messaging and its propaganda, despite the losses of its territory. But it's hard to argue that there's anything quite as attractive from a recruitment standpoint than what it had several years ago, when it was able to control significant swaths of territory and claim that it had this caliphate. And that was such a compelling message, and it was such a message of success. And it's certainly able to point to attacks now and to certain events to say, you know, the group is surviving, it will persevere, but it's not quite as compelling of a message. So I don't think we're seeing recruitment on the same level as we were in those sort of heady years of the caliphate, the quote-unquote caliphate. But there is still, it seems the group is still able to attract followers, and really importantly, able to inspire people and to help people to conduct attacks in its name.
Tricia Bacon, author of Why Terrorist Groups Form Alliances. GJ Green, WTOP News.